This talk is offered by Ordinary Mind Zendo. Ordinary Mind was founded by Barry Magid, Dharma heir of Charlotte Joko Beck, and is dedicated to her vision of a psychologically minded Zen practice adapted to the needs of American students practicing in the context of their everyday lives. Our public programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
The 17th century French philosopher and mathematician René Descartes usually gets a lot of bad press among Buddhists because he's associated with the idea of dualism, which we're all sure we know is very wrongheaded. But I've been reading a little bit about Descartes, actually in an excellent book by Bernard Williams. And to the extent that you look at his life and what motivated his project and led to his conclusions, you can see that what he was up to, in some sense, took to an extreme logical conclusion certain ideas or tendencies that we're very likely to find in ourselves, in our own ideas of practice. It's probably important to begin with the biographical fact that Descartes' mother died when he was 1 year old. He has this in common. Shakyamuni and many great Buddhist teachers. The loss of a mother early on seems to be one thing that propels a quest for some kind of certainty. And people can pursue certainty of a scientific kind, a philosophical kind, or a religious kind. Both religion and science promise access to the truth through different means. Well, we might imagine that one of the reasons people begin to preoccupy themselves with a search for capital T truth in this life is that they start out with an unusual degree of uncertainty or instability. This is not to delegitimize the whole quest or process. People can come to important realizations even if they start from very psychologically complex motivations. It's, you know, as I've said, we all start with a personal secret practice that we have to work our way through. But it is significant to me that Descartes, being a motherless child, became preoccupied with certainty. In his quest for it, he developed a kind of radical skeptical program. Wanting to begin somehow with only what he could be absolutely positive about. Wanting to doubt everything that was not absolutely certain and knowable. And among the things he found he could doubt was the existence of the world and other people and his own sense perceptions. The idea, the skeptical doubt of perception is one where we say, I know they're optical illusions, I know they're hallucinations, I know that I can be dreaming and imagine something's happening and it's not happening. How do I know that's not the case all of the time instead of just some of the time? And in his trying to find some kind of bedrock of knowledge, he famously came back to the idea that whatever's going on, he could not doubt that he was conscious and experiencing something. This was the import of his famous cogito, ergo sum. We usually translate that as I think, therefore I am. Probably should be something like I'm aware or I'm conscious. I can't doubt that. The dilemma is that awareness quickly becomes associated with thinking and thinking with thinking about something on the outside, and then as soon as you posit an external world, you doubt if you're right about it. He potentially could have started from a slightly different place of certainty. Rather than thinking, he might have started with feeling. One cannot doubt whether one is happy or sad or in pain. Those states of awareness are not inferred. We don't have evidence that we use to conclude we're in pain. We're just in pain. And even if we're dreaming that we're in pain, in the dream we're feeling pain. There's no illusion of being in pain. Pain is simply pain, however it occurs. If we start with feeling, we might reconnect ourselves to the world in a somewhat different way as well. For instance, if we think that the most undoubtable thing about us is our love or our need for love, that's not a project we're going to pursue it by ourselves. Right? The dilemma with Descartes' pursuit of knowledge is that it's essentially a one-person pursuit. It's I am going to, by myself, pull myself up by my own intellectual bootstraps, reconstitute the world, and figure out how I can be sure of things. But if he started with his own loneliness or need for love as the most undoubtable thing about himself, these things have intentionality built into them. By their nature, they're not things you can feel alone. In any case, Descartes found that his skepticism of perception and of the world was, in a certain sense, insoluble. Unless he allowed that a benign God would not arrange the world such that all his sense perceptions were illusions. And so he substituted a belief in his embeddedness in life, substituted a belief of his own experience or sensation for a belief in God. God became the transcendent, absolute, real thing that he could believe in. See, I would say now that God has every perfect quality imaginable except existence. But Descartes sort of decided he would hinge his belief in the world on his belief in God. God being conveniently abstract and distant enough that he does not come under our skeptical knife. Now, I think that's a move that, as I said before, one way or another, we're all very tempted to make. And it has to do with the substitution of something abstract or transcendent for something contingent in particular. I would say it's certainly not a mystery that many people who are disappointed or thwarted in receiving love from their parents or from their partners, their lovers, in a certain sense, turn away from the unreliability of other people and try to put their faith in something perfect and by definition completely reliable in God. I think that this in one way it's also the source of something we hear a lot from people when they say that they're spiritual but not religious. But you know, I usually say the opposite. I'm religious but not spiritual. I think that move to spirituality is often a way of saying, I have an awful hard time with actual human institutions. I don't like the church. I don't particularly like the priest. I don't like to actually have to show up and do anything. But I do like cultivating certain very private personal experiences in myself. And I'd like to think that by myself, either by myself or a cushion or just in some kind of way in which I pick or choose at will from, you know, all the world's religions and experiences, I'll cobble together my own little version of spirituality. And then I don't have to deal with the unreliability or messiness or difficulty of actual sanghas, of actual teachers, of actual religious organizations, because those things are a little too much like my family, you know. And I don't want another one of those. Right? So I think, again, it's a big challenge to become aware of and resist the temptation to move from the particular to the abstract. I think, in a way, probably part of most people's secret practice, that that's what they're doing here. I think meditation in a certain way epitomizes for a lot of people that capacity to try to go inward to private experience rather than deal with something institutional or communal or interpersonal. It's why in our practice of Jukai here, one of the things I say about that is it's intended specifically to take practice off the cushion and get it back into the group and your relations with other people. Jukai is about taking responsibility for the particulars of maintaining a sangha. And the simple ways of showing up and ringing the bell and learning the rituals and taking care of things, but also putting sangha relations before the cultivation of your personal private experience on the cushion. That's often much harder. You know, for a lot of people, we like the practice except for the other people, right? Compassion is a good thing. It's just the other people that are the problem, right? There's so much about this practice that both tempts us to go down that road, but gives us the opportunity to recognize it and turn backwards and try to return to what it is that motivates us in the first place. I've often said that in Buddhism we hear a great deal about being compassionate towards others. What's dissociated, what's never spoken, is our need to be at the receiving end of compassion. That we are needy, vulnerable, lonely people who want to receive love and compassion and attention and feel like we belong, feel like we matter. Too often practice is, I think, perverted into an attempt to transcend all that kind of contingent, dependent neediness, right? And that the enlightened state will somehow be one in which we no longer need anything, but we will simply be taking care of everyone else as bodhisattvas. This, I think, is a neurosis masquerading as spirituality. A kind of high-minded attempt to transcend our own humanity. Descartes, in many ways, was simply doing what we all do, trying to find absolute certainty in a world where there is none, with dualism trying to preserve free will and an immortal soul in a world that is mortal and contingent and transient. When we think we reject his project, his dualism, we should look into ourselves and see the extent to which we're really not so different.